Conference Committee on Health File 392 to order. I understand there's been some good work being done by a little subgroup of Green Acres, conferees, which is Article 2 of the bill. Senator Scoy, you want to kind of give us a little idea what's been...
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to grab my little spreadsheet here. Met with members of the House and Senator Olsen this morning, and we took a good hard look at the chart graph that the House passed out in committee last night, and kind of narrowed ourselves down to what we had for differences. And a little unprepared because I gave my notes away to the staff when we were drafting this, but we worked off of the Arnold Zippel. Exactly what I need. Thank you. The Arnold Zippel bill, and we reached consensus on all the items on this bill, and we think that that rural vacant land can be withdrawn prior to 5/1/2010 with no back taxes. We think that we'll revert to the three-year clawback. We agreed upon a definition of non-productive land. We actually incorporated some of Representative South's work in this area. We think he had some language that was very good and clarified the issue, so we incorporated that into our work. The Senate kind of acceded to the House with regard to the CRP and non-permanent rim land qualifying for Green Acres in the future. We thought they had some pretty good points that they made there, and so we agreed to that. Number seven was pretty much, we both agreed that we need to clarify the technical transfers. We dealt with some of the problems about the House's concern with regard to grandfathering rural vacant lands by reviewing current law. And current law says that as long as the land that is sold or transferred that is in Green Acres or in the future in the Conservation Reserve Program maintains that current use, that there would be no payback or clawback of taxes, and actually that is current law. So we felt we didn't need to deal with that anymore, as that's the, what we were trying to reach an intent. We did have a pretty good discussion about the cross-compliance discussion that we had yet last night, and we really think it was a pretty good idea, but we kind of came to the conclusion that this hadn't had enough public vetting and we should leave this aside for now, but it's something we might want to look at in the future. And that's pretty much where we ended up. We've got a draft of the bill. There is a couple of amendments that I need. One is an oversight that I am Senate...
So why don't we to get in front of the committee, let's move JMZ0003. Is that the right document? Senator Scoy moved to get it in front of us. I think there's a small amendment that just kind of got omitted, so maybe we can kind of get it in shape, and then if we have some oral work on it, we can incorporate some oral things. But I think there's a written, Senator Scoy moved the JMZ0003, and Senator Scoy, you have an amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, passing out the A2 amendment. This is just an oversight. We have in the bill language dealing with a one-year time period where people will not have to pay any clawback if they withdraw their land from Green Acres. We made this retroactive to last year's law changes. We weren't clear that if they had paid those taxes that they would be getting a refund, and that's what this language does. So I would move the A2 amendment.
On the A2 amendments, any discussion? Not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I say no, the motion prevails. A2 is adopted. Now, I believe, members, there's been a little discussion about some oral amendments to the Article 2. So, and I think the thought is, members, we We'll maybe have council just kind of keep score as to what the oral discussion is going to be here, and then maybe at the conclusion of our meeting today, we will direct staff to incorporate into the AMZ 0003 the results of the oral discussion we're about to have, rather than have to go to the trouble of going to the revisers and get things drafted on paper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, in discussion with the House this morning, and particularly discussion with Senator Vandeveer, we think it's important that we clarify that the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue is the final administrative arbitrator of disputes. And I've talked to the Commissioner, and he's supportive of this. So I think let staff determine where exactly that should reside. But I would like to move that oral amendment that in the JMZ 0003 amendment, where appropriate, the language, the Commissioner of the Department of Revenue is the final administrative arbitrator of disputes, and give Senator Vandeveer the credit for this amendment.
You're not a virgin anymore.
Senator Vandeveer, that makes sense to you?
Yeah.
Any other discussion on that oral amendment? Staff understand what we're proposing here? Department okay with that? Commissioner's nodding yes. On the oral amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
After no, motion prevails. Oral amendments adopted. There's why other oral.
Mr. Chair, I don't have anything more, but I think the House members have some points that they would like to
bring forward. I got an amendment. Two, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Wow. I'd offer the A1 amendment.
This amendment, we've talked about it too, and it does a couple things, Mr. Chair and members. Number one, and I'll give this credit to Representative Dimmer, we thought we should name the land conservation something else. It's so we don't confuse it with, we have a lot of conservation programs in this state. This is in association with Green Acres, and it's an ag land or ag unit thing. So this simply changes land conservation in the bill to a rural preserve program. So I think that matches what we're doing with agriculture a bit better. And again, Representative Dimmer kind of thought of that, and I think it's a good idea. So we'd offer that. The second part, 1.5 and 1.6, is something we bring forward again from the Faust work and the bill that came out of our Ag Committee, Ag Finance Committee in the House. And again, this one, with the thought that we realize that this whole bill doesn't take effect until January 1st, 2011, so we have a year and a half to see how this works out, but we still, I think, are pretty adamant that according to the auditor's report, number one, there was a lot of abuse in this program, and that's why you all had this discussion last year. This is supposed to be an ag program. It's not a timber program or a wetland program or anything else. It's for ag preserve now and ag units. So with the Faust language, what we do is keep the 50, you have to have at least 50% of your acreage, both Green Acres and Rural Preserve, has to be agriculture in your farm unit, in your homesteaded farm unit. And again, we know there's a couple people out there that might have 90% woodlot and 10% agriculture that will have to look at this, but this was work that came out of the House, and I think technically we all agree with that. Again, if there's thousands and thousands and thousands of people this affects, we'll hear about it, but I don't think we will, number one. And number two, Mr. Chair, I know you and Senator Stoy and others are all aware there's a lot of timber preserve and other programs for timber and woodlots in this state that are not related to agriculture. And so we think it's better to put it in now. And we've still got a year and a half to discuss if there needs to be changes, but it really focuses again that this is an agriculture program. And so you can have up to 49% non-ag if you're signing up rural preserve land with your homesteaded, but you can't go more than 50. And I think that's a rational way to look at it.
Well, Representative Judge, just so that I'm clear, this doesn't disqualify anybody from participating in the program. It just puts a cap on the number of acres they can have reluctant to use the word non-productive or non-tillable.
In the new rural preserve.
So if I had 60 acres in the rural preserve, I could only get the preference on 50.
If you're
50%.
Right. If you had a 100-acre parcel, you could have up to 50 acres in the rural preserve. You couldn't have over 50. So if you had 52 acres, you'd have to not put 2 acres in the program to make that distinction.
Mr. Chair, thank you. One of the concerns I have with this is, I'm going to use Isanti County as an example. There's a lot of wetland in Isanti County, and a 160-acre farm may have more than half of it be wetlands that's non-productive agriculture. And so then Tony said something that has really stuck with me throughout these whole discussions, and it, at the time in 1968 or 69 when Green Acres was first implemented, your farm was your farm, you know, and they just cut it out and put it in Green Acres. There was no discussion at all at that time about productive versus non-productive land. And so some people, I think, with this 50%, going back to what I think Representative Marco has talked about in the past, that you know, you're kind of putting them in a rough position, because just because of the lie of the land, a lot of their farm will no longer qualify for, or a portion of it would not meet the maybe it's 20 acres, maybe it's 40 acres, depending on the size of the farm, would not meet that. So in our neck of the woods, the lie of the land just kind of leads to making that number a little tougher.
And again, it would have to be classified as 2B, too. This isn't any of the tillable or any of the pasture. I mean, it's a 2B that's non-productive land, totally. So again, it's a fundamental question. I realize that. Is this an ag program, or is this something else?
Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, the only thing that I would say is we have stopped using the term non-productive land. Non-traditional
land. Non-traditional land.
Oh, man.
I didn't resort to the 2B.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think therein lies the question, and therein is where we ran into all of the trouble. And that's where we started hearing about folks, you know, is it non-tillable or simply not being tilled? And so, you know, if we drop these acres out, people are going to be cutting down their trees and tilling to then get those acres into green acres. You know, whether or not they're classified 2A or 2B, you know, are they going to try to get those, you know, and I think that's what we hear. That's got a lot of people exercised, and are we recreating or reopening that problem, that dilemma, by application of this amendment?
And again, Mr. Chair, we still have a year and a half to discover if that's really a problem with most people. And again, talking to the farm groups and others, if you're really a true blue farmer farming, this is not a problem. Most of your farmland, if you're making a living off that land, if you're a farmer, if this is preserving ag land, you've got way more productive acres, or whatever Scory's vernacular is, than the other. And so, and again, we have a year and a half. I think it's easier to put it in now and have the discussion. And again, until January 1st, 2011, it's easier then to delete it later than to add it later, because we're having the discussion now. And again, I go back to the auditor's report. If we're not going to make changes on the auditor's report, we shouldn't have even done it, and we should just continue what we're doing. Just do the grandfather and let's move on. And this is one of those changes that does point to ag land.
Representative
Demmer. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a clarifying question here. My understanding, we did talk about this. I thought I heard you say that no more than 50% of the land can be put into the rural preserve. And that's different than what I thought it was to say that combined rural green acres and rural preserve, you can't have more than 50%. And the difference would be is if I've got, let's just say I have 40 acres and it's all rural vacant land, can I put none of it in? Can I put half of that in? And how is that distinguished from if I have 15 acres of ag land and 35 acres of rural vacant land, 15 acres of green acres, am I now limited to 15 acres of rural vacant land. You see the distinction?
But, and Mr. Chair, it's 15 acres of the total parcel, contiguous parcel that you're signing up, which part of it can be rural preserved.
But again, am I limited to my rural preserve land by the number of green acres land, or am I limited by 50%?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Demmer and members. My interpretation, and I would draw your attention to page 5, line 7. My interpretation is that for the, if we rename this the rural preserve land portion, you can have some 2A land in there, and now if this amendment was to go on, you could have 50% of the total ag homestead parcel in the rural preserve that was 2B. Does that make sense? I think that's what this...
So if you have a contiguous 320-acre farm,
mm-hmm.
if you're enrolling, it's all homesteaded, you can enroll up to 160 acres of non-ag rural preserves
in this program, which is a lot.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer, plus if you had a 7 or 10 acre parcel of ag land, that would then be on top of that.
Yeah. You could go beyond.
You could go beyond.
On the ag side.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, then what would happen is the ag land would be presumed to be in green acres, and the other preserve would be in the rural preserve.
Right.
Exactly.
Or would it all?
Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer, the ag land would be in the rural preserve. That would be a decision that the landowner could make. There could be some small parcels of ag land that could go in there. And I have the reason that I have for that is that there are some of these parcels out there that are 8.5 acres. And we do not want that individual to cut trees or plow up grass to get to 10. So we said, well, they don't qualify for green acres. They're under 10. But if they have other land that would meet the 10-acre criteria in rural preserve, they could take that into the rural preserve program. And it's an effort to minimize this big discussion we had about people cutting trees and plowing up grass.
So Mr. Chair, in your example you just gave, and so basically it goes both ways. If I've got a large green acres parcel with some smaller pieces of 2B, the 2B can be ag.
Mm-hmm.
And if I go the other direction, if I got large 2B and a small amount of 2A, the 2A can be the, am I right?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Demmer, you are right. As long as it meets the criteria that it's impractical to separate values sold and whatever the new word. I keep forgetting that intermixed or interspersed word that we've added.
And Mr. Chair, I guess I'll ask Senator Scully. I don't think there's anything that prevents you from signing up multiple parcels either as long as they're homesteaded and not contiguous. You could sign up a parcel, you're homesteading a mile and a half down the road. If it's, you know, you could homestead non-contiguous land too, so you could sign up. You know, it doesn't have to meet that. Yeah.
Where is that, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct. So, I think it covers a lot of stuff. What Senator Scoyce put together, and this just kind of clarifies the ag portion of it.
Representative Dunham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that was my clarification question. I guess I'm going to raise a little bit of a concern about the provision. And I know we talked about this, and this is no surprise because I've said this before. I believe, number one, the percentage could be somewhat arbitrary, that we're just going to say that we're going to limit it to 50%, and I don't know the rationale for it, other than you could say, well, we're going to limit the amount of acres that can go in. I think the idea is to put this land and give it some preferential tax treatment with the intent to not give people incentive to develop it any sooner than they would. I think that's the idea behind this. So, number one, I think it's a bit arbitrary, and that gives me a little concern. And the second thing is just in our discussion here, is this another thing that's going to be a point of confusion, if you will, out there? And that's another concern that I would have. And again, we can fix this later, I understand that, but it's a concern I have, and honestly, I'd rather not see it. But
we don't spend a lot of time on something that may not end up in the bill. Does the House have 3 votes for this? Before the Senate, before we spend a whole bunch of time on it.
Representative Demers reflecting a couple members who had some concerns because they might have a person or two that has this situation that didn't meet the 50%. So again, and to address the arbitrariness of it, I mean, 50% or more means it's an ag program. Like Senator Dibble said, that's our fundamental question. Is it an ag program, or is it something else?
Senator Dibble.
Well, I couldn't have stated it any better. And I think that's what we discovered. And that's frankly what I think we heard from a lot of farmers, a lot of rural ag owners, to say, sure, we're farmers, but we're also trying to preserve and conserve the land, and so we don't necessarily want to farm every inch or every available inch because we have, you know, some larger public benefit in mind, and you're taking that away from us, and so pushing us into not doing that anymore. So I think we have our answer that thought it was purely an ag farming issue, and it's not. And I think this amendment moves us.
Clarifies one way.
Exactly.
Sir, well, you forgot the word speculum. That nobody's been talking about, but we all know some of that was happening in the Green Acres program.
For both the ag land and the
right.
Non-traditional.
Correct. Yeah.
Traditional.
I had to write that down.
Any other comments? Senator Vanderbilt.
Sure, but I think we discovered one other thing, and that is that we like the environment being first in our area, and that there's advantages to having this program because of the advantages to the open space and the protection of the land. So, to me, this 50% is continuing with, I think, the negative part of it, but it doesn't. She's positive, but I'd also like to see what that actually looks like for that care. I don't know if there's any way to do that. I think we have some idea on how that impacts if you had a situation where half of it. I mean, that's one thing we haven't done is look at any runs at all. I think that.
All right. Senator, every idea is not a good
one. I didn't mean that.
Well, I, Representative Junkie, I'm reluctant. I'm just a little afraid that my friends that care a lot about these Green Acre provisions are going to start to get emails from people back home. But having said that, I think we've got some time. I guess I'm probably willing to go along if the House feels really strongly about it. But last time the House felt really strongly, we did a 7-year clawback instead of 3, and we got ourselves in all kinds of trouble. So just want to be clear, if we go down this road, we're going to forward our emails to our House colleagues. Because we may find something unintended here, I guess. Put this in as the only way to find out if that's the case.
Well, and again, Mr. Chair, I'll just amplify again that it's a year and a half till this kicks in, and if we all decide that you don't care how much ag land is there to enroll in the Green Acres in the Rural Preserve Program, so be it, but then it is truly something else. So be it then. And if that's the decision that the legislature wants to make in the next year and a half before this kicks in, then just remember, it's not an ag program anymore. It's a timber program up in your area, or you literally can enroll anything then without regard to the agriculture.
And if we're willing to go along and put a lot of work into this, go along and see how we do.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote for it, but I'm going to let my Senate colleagues, as always, make their own mind.
Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I guess in deference to our work here earlier, Representative Junkie's right. I mean, we got a year and a half so we can think about this, we can chew on it, we can debate it, and we can come in and fix it. I do have to point out that adding the rural preserve, which, you know, is the Senate piece, that is what makes this not just a farm program anymore. Because, and I know we're still trying to tie it to ag land, but if we think back to that, to say again, if we think back to the purpose of this program to begin with, we're making a decision. Number one, a decision was made that agricultural land under plow, or however you want to say it, should get preferential treatment so we don't incent it to be out before it has to. We're now making an additional judgment that non-agricultural, rural vacant land will have a new program that it can go to for the same purpose. And I think that's what we're doing by creating the rural preserve. The question is do we limit how much can go in there? So I don't know, Representative Junkie, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I think that's really what it comes down to. We're creating another program for non-ag land to go to, is what we're doing, after it runs out in its grandfather. We're creating a place for it to go. We talked about that before. This deals with how much of somebody's land are we willing to let go in, and what are we tying that limitation to? And we're tying it to farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's our decision. And the bottom line is we can do this and change it later, but, you know, that's the point. Because, again, delayed implementation, and we're doing that for a reason, because we all got a chance to hear from folks, and no harm should be done until we get a chance to deal with this in another session.
Representative Nemer, are you trying to relieve some of the Senate's angst over your earlier very good argument?
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to relieve my own angst, so my own argument is what I'm trying to do.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nemer is talking me into changing my mind.
We should quit talking about it. Madam Chair, anything to add?
Ready to call.
On the A1 Junkie Amendment, all in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
Entry no?
No.
No.
Motion for that. A1 is
approved. Okay. Get a division on it.
Sure.
We really want to.
I think the argument was we had a year and a half to find out what the depth of the problem is.
My hearing is a little bit.
Do we want? That's not necessary.
All right.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Markham.
Just a couple things. First of all, I want to thank Senator Scoy for his work on what's now the Rural Preserve. But just to provide a little more comfort language, and we talked to him earlier about make it just even more of a preserve, if you will. So there's just a couple of changes on line 5.15. Looking at extending the minimum number of years you must be enrolled from 8 to 10, then the notice from 4 to 5 years. So that makes 5.15, change the word 8 to 10. And then on line 6.12, I think it would be change the word 4 to 5. And then, Senator Sway, would 6.14 need to be changed also from 4 to 5 then?
You're ahead of me, Mr. Chair. You're ahead of me. Would you start again, please? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, what we would do is on line 5.15, increase from the number 8 to number 10. I don't know if there's numbers any more on that. But then on page 6.12, we would raise the number 4 to 5. And then, Senator Scoy, my question is on 6.14, would you also then raise that 4 to 5? I think that's it. Okay, so on 6.14, 4 to 5, and staff maybe could help if there's another number that needs to be changed. So I would move that.
Representative Markwart moves on line 5.15. Delete 8, insert 10, and on line 6.12, delete 4, insert 5, and on line 6.14, delete 4, insert 5. And if there's anywhere else in here that council needs to change a number from 4 to 5 or from 8 to 10, they'd be instructed to do so.
Well, Mr. Chair, would it be helpful if we just walk through what the covenant is going to do with these changes?
Before we adopt
it. And Mr. Chair and members, what these changes, if they're adopted, what we will have for a covenant is we would have a 10-year covenant, of which when an individual landowner signs up for, the land would have to be enrolled in the program for 5 years before they can apply to withdraw. Then there's another 5-year time period in order for them to withdraw. If they do withdraw, there then is a 3-year wait in order for them to reapply.
Actually makes the covenants stronger.
And Mr. Chair, just to remind people, a covenant does run with the land. It has nothing to do with the person. So this can be passed on to anyone.
transferred
to, and is transferable with the land to anyone.
Mr. Chair, Representative Junkie, that's correct.
Senator Olstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've answered our question if we've gone from an agricultural preserve program to a conservation program, and I think we have in this case. And but going to the 10 years and the 5-year withdrawal, people are obviously they're getting a tax advantage by enrolling in this program. So we've also set up some criteria that they have to meet to enter the program. So it's not as easy as it might appear as to just sign up from Green Acres to Rural Preserve. And so I guess I'm just not comfortable going to that longer time. I understand what you guys are saying. You're getting a tax benefit to preserve land. We should be preserving it longer into the future. That's true. I would agree with you on that point. But I think that, giving 4-year notice that you're going to withdraw your land from this program is plenty enough time. So I just think that that's going just a little bit too far. I'd rather stay at the 4 than the
8.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And those are all good points. But what we heard in a lot of testimony when we talked about this rural vacant land is, we want to keep it in conservation. We won't have to cut trees down. So, I think what we're saying is that truly, if that was your intent, I think there should be a commitment there. And we can talk about the number of years. And we're just thinking 10 years would be a little more of a commitment for something like this. And I don't think that would greatly expand this bill, but it does make it a little stronger of a covenant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually a question for Representative Junkie, just kind of prodded the question out of me, but with the that the covenant follows the land upon a sale or transfer of property. I just want to make sure that that doesn't reset the clock for this 4 and 8 years or 5 and 10 year provision.
Good question.
Yeah.
No.
No.
And I have no problem.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the other thing about the 8 years is it lines up with the Metro Preserve District. So that's kind of a nice lineup there.
Senator Vandenberg.
I'm not trying to remember what that is this year. I think this is making it further differentiated from the original program and it's making it worse. And I think I don't think that was okay.
Mr. Chair, well, one of the critiques that the legislative auditor offered was that we weren't being strong enough with regard to the ag preservation. This does make this stronger, and so I'm going to support Marquardt.
Senator Dibble, are you the third vote?
Chair, I'm for this.
I noticed there was a couple no-votes last time for different reasons. It was an honest vote.
Shouldn't have to be spiritually cared about.
You got the House has the votes on this.
I put my land in. I signed it in for 8 years. At 10 years, at year 7, I sell it to Representative Junkie. He says, I'm going to leave it in, so he gets to keep it in.
He has no choice.
Well, he can take it out. You get to pay the penalty.
I can pay the penalty.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, my question has to do with, for him to sell it then, or to do something different with it,
right,
under the 5-year deal, he would actually have to re-enroll it then.
To go further,
but then he would have given the 5-year notice. He'd have to re-enroll it for 3 years and then take it out.
And I can't take penalties on the company. I got another 3 years.
Am I right in that? Following me?
It's your program. I think
it's a question.
He won't be able to take it out because he didn't meet the notice.
Right. Well, he'd be able to meet the notice by saying, I'm giving notice today. The covenant runs out in 2 years, he re-enrolls it, and then at year 3, it's been in 5 years, that's his 5-year notice, and then he can do it. Am I interpreting it right?
No. I'm not tracking the question.
Madam Chair,
people are without
energy.
Oh, boy.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, it's an energy.
You're the only one at this table that hasn't been a House member. I wonder why the House is getting their way with us here. The department have a thought about their question? And maybe we can rephrase it.
It goes on and on and on.
Mr. Hagan, Representative Electro, repeat the scenario.
Basically, I'll rephrase it just a bit. If I put it in for 10 years, at year 7 I sell the land, that's no problem. The person I sell it to wants to do something, wants to give 5-year notice. There's only 3 years left in the covenant. How does he do that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Demmer, my understanding of the way the covenant is drafted is that you need to notify them and give them under this proposal a 5-year notice of when you want to get out. You have to be in for a minimum of 5 years.
Yeah.
After 5 years, you can you can ask to get out after 5 years, and then it takes 5 more years to get out. So if you'd owned the property for 7 years, when you sold it, he could make the application to get out. He would be in for a total of 5 years, the 3 years you had left, and 2 additional.
Sure.
Okay.
Sir, the year they keep their land and eggs is the year they pay their debt. By using the land the way they agreed, they get the tax break that year. That's how it used to be. Now, then if you got out, then you have penalties to pay if you sold it. But now this is a dramatic change. This is not a mild little thing. This is a penalty, a long-term commitment. This is not Green Acres. We're near what it was. Just so.
Mr. Hagan, what's your take on that?
Chairman, I'm not sure I'm following that.
Well, Senator, what's your thought?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, the criteria for Green Acres remains the same. It's for these parcels that were non-conforming to Green Acres, but were in Green Acres, that we're trying to find a home for, that they have different criteria.
Yeah,
but the Green Acres stays the same.
Right. By going by the rules, Green Acres.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, I mean, we can do semantics were all around about why these parcels were in there. Was assessors not uniformly implementing the law or whatever? We've kind of, in my mind, moved off that, and I'm looking for a place for these parcels to go.
Senator Dole. And we have to vote on the bill upstairs, so we got to run up quick. But Senator Dole?
Well, I can defer to Ms. Hagan. I mean, I think I have an explanation for how this works.
Okay, well, I think we have the vote, but we don't need another explanation. on the mark for oral amendment, changing 8 to 10 and 4 to 5. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Country, no.
No.
Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Marker.
Just one last area that I think needs some clarification.
Representative Marker, if there's something that's going to take a little time, they need us up there to vote on it.
Okay.
We'll be up and down like they're just kind of holding the board for us, I think. So we're going to recess for no more than 10 minutes. I think that's where we left off.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And let me get to my page. On page 4, line 9, when we deal with transfers, right now, if you look under number 1, the transfer is only good in the death of a property owner when a surviving owner retains ownership. And I know on the house side we had discussed where it would basically be sons or daughters, or you'd be able to transfer. Because the only reason it's being transferred is because of a death. And this seems pretty restrictive. It's just a surviving owner. I don't know, Senator Scoy, earlier today, if it just was written differently or it was missed or whatever.
Page and line, please.
4.9. So we're looking at expanding that. I don't know. Mr. Chair, Mr. Michael could quickly address that, if that would be all right.
Mr. Michael is here. Oh, there. Mr. Chair, I think the policy issue here for the conference committee is whether or not you want to allow the grandfather to continue if there's a transfer by death to someone other than an individual who was a joint tenant or a tenant in common or something like that in the property. So if it passes, for example, by will or under the survivor provision in the trust, whether you want that to end the grandfather, and that's the sort of the policy issue. We don't have any language, but we could expand this. It sort of says anything that's occasioned.
Yes.
Anything that's triggered by the death of one of the owners would not cause the loss of the grandfather, which would be a little broader than this, that I think requires sort of co-ownership.
Bob? All the tightening you guys have been doing, now you want to liberalize it. Senator Scott.
Well, Mr. Chair, this language is the same in what you guys were working on. It came over in your, I don't have your draft here. So I thought we just kind of took the same language from both bodies there. But to be honest, this is an expansion beyond what the people had when they originally signed up for Green Acres, and I don't think that's the direction that we wanted to go.
So, Mark, do you feel compelling to try to continue to discuss this line?
Mr. Chair, we always have a year and a half to look at it if need be. I mean,
I'm actually not tracking on why don't lines 411 and 412 get to that as written, get to the issue you're raising as written?
Mr. Chair,
no, Mark,
this looks to be primarily would have to be a owner, a co-owner. So it might not be a son or a daughter or someone else that you would want to pass that on to.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more thing, members. This is for land that is not in conforming. The land that's in conforming category is covered under existing law and can be transferred to anybody as long as it stays in either program. This is for land that is not conforming. And that's really the heart of this, is these parcels are in that group that were, missed in the program. And I don't see any reason why we'd want to give this benefit to go on any longer than we have to.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like Senator Scoy is not in great approval of that. So, again, I think we can
come
back and look at this if need be.
Got a year and a half.
I think we've got a really good product here, so let's move it.
Senator Dole.
I support Representative Mark Martin.
Can I
support
that?
No, I
don't.
Mr. Chair, one clarification before we leave Green Acres. We just want to make sure, because it isn't as complicated, 50% isn't as complicated as what everyone thinks, and our council, if you'd allow him just briefly, so Senate Council and the people that are drafting understand the concepts we've talked about.
Mr. Hyde.
Mr. Chairman, the confusion I think in the language you adopted is that it says if an agricultural homestead is enrolled in this program, and really the homestead wouldn't have to be in the conservation program, because we'd expect that the agricultural part of the program would be in the Green Acres program.
Right.
So the language that has come up with as an alternative, and we've offered the copy, is to say that for land that is part of an agricultural homestead, the number of Class 2B acres enrolled may not exceed the number of Class 2A acres enrolled under Section 273.101, which is Green Acres, or enrolled in this program.
Right.
So the 2A, you look at the two programs together, Green Acres and this program, the 2A, you get the equal number of 2B can be in this program.
And Mr. Chair, that just clarifies it for council. That is what I meant in this, and we just want to make it clear. It's you can also use your Green Acres as part of this, too.
It doesn't change anything. That's simply clarification. I'm not offering that language, but to clarify for the people that are writing the final language. And our thing here. Who can...
Okay, this is... We're talking about who can...
Well, now we're on to that one again.
That's a good
one. Well, I've got to come back to that because whether it's system is going to be a permanent support to a lot of people.
Yeah.
The contract to me is that.
I mean, where we just.
Back to your
non-conforming question. Mr. Chair and Senator Vandiver, if it's a conforming parcel and it remains in the program after the sale or transfer, it can be anybody. But if it's a non-conforming parcel, we've restricted this to the conditions that the department allowed when these individual landowners originally signed up however many years ago it was, and those four conditions were death, divorce, marriage, or transfer to son or daughter, and we held in the Senate consistent on that, and I feel quite strongly that we don't want to expand it outside of that because these are for non-conforming parcels, and we're trying to get everybody into conforming.
I understand where we're at on the Green Acres article. Also understand what the instructions are.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Were we just talking about 3.12 to 3.14? Is that what Senator Vandiver was talking about? Is that the part?
Senator Vandiver?
Yeah.
What part of the bill are you looking at? 3.12?
Are you talking about where it says transfer to son or daughter?
I was looking at the 4.10 as well.
Which was what?
Mark,
411, 412.
Mark Bart was.
You were talking about.
Mr. Chair, 4.9 is where I'm at.
3.12 is for the non conforming.
Did you have a motion, Representative Mark?
No, I did not.
No, we keep. We're good. Are we going to have a motion, or are we going to move on?
If I could, Mr. Chair, and that is, I would like to have an option to record and have so that someone could go and have their work done at the an extension service. Would that be
problematic? I think we talked about it yesterday. Sir, wait. Senator Vandiver's question about do we need to put some reference to the extension service in here, or could a landowner actually draft their own plan under the Bowser guidelines? I think is the question.
Well, Mr. Chair and members.
The line, Senator.
Yeah, on page 5, 5 and 6. We thought that somebody should have some guidelines that for these plans. But beyond that, I believe the U of M Extension Service, I think the Soil Water Conservation District, I think there are currently conservation plan drafters that are doing plans for RIM and other things, consultants, that could do this. I think the range of possibilities of people to draft these plans is pretty broad, and I can't see that it wouldn't include the University of Minnesota Extension.
So, I'm just wondering if we could, if we need 5.5.
Well, I think we do if we're going to establish some kind of guidance.
It's their guideline. Anyone can draft it.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wolfing.
I know that Senator Vandiver has concerns with the Board of Water and Soil, but I think it's important, like you're saying, this is really just the boilerplate that they would be taking all the contingencies like 1 through 8 and saying, okay, this is what it means, and they'd be just a one-time deal where they make that up, and then you can take and go to your Soil and Water Conservation District and say, I need a conservation plan, and they'll have it, that'll be the draft plan. So it's not like, I think once, my understanding is that once the Board of Soil and Water drafts the plan, they're out of it.
they've just drafted a plan, and that's the standard plan throughout the state. That's my understanding.
Mr.
Chair, Senator.
Yeah, I can take one.
Why, if revenue is so impressive, why couldn't they ask the board to help the plan and have people to revenue to add that instead of going to the board to the Board of Water and Sewer?
This seems like we're at,
we're throwing them in and having this
Anybody here from the Board of Water and Soil?
Could she help us out?
Can you help us out a little bit here?
Yeah.
Help us out. Are you guys going to be able to draft some guidelines that Senator Vanderveer can live with, or is he going to come with a bill next year?
I believe we can do what the bill says, Mr. Chairman.
We need your name and who you represent for the record.
I'm the Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources.
What, as it relates to drafting the guidelines for a plan, what's the process that the board goes through? You know, we're giving you some direction here. Now, what's your role then in preparing some kind of a template plan then for plan writers to use? What does that process look like?
I can't remember the other things. There are many, many of these plans in place for all the programs that conservation requires already. And so what we would use is those similar templates that could be used for this program with some input that may be unique from assessors or from the Department of Revenue or anybody else who wants to provide some input to these details. But really, it's just about the conservation aspect of that piece of property, and it could be a little bit different from one county to the next, as I was indicating. So we would use past practices, and it would just be guidance that people could utilize if they chose to.
Mr. Chair, so I think Bowser is a good board to do this, and I would agree with the senator. So I would.
We'd rather have a motion in front of us.
Okay, so I believe we could solve Senator Vanderveer's concern if we simply said that the Board of Soil and Water, when they do their plan, they submit it to the chairs of the property tax subcommittee or something. Or to the tax chair. Well, but then you guys. But I think then there would be a legislative review of it, and I think that, I don't know, I can't speak for Senator Vanderveer, but would that alleviate your concern?
It would if we knew the chairs were going to be.
No, you know, Senator Vanderveer, you got a motion? Otherwise, we're right. Spending a lot of time.
I would have one that would say that the Department of Revenue shall, in consultation with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, develop and distribute. And the reason is having. We don't.
Some are good, and some aren't.
And I don't know what these people did to deserve a additional important people on their and it just fall on your sword.
On the Vanderveer motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Country, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Other discussion. Representative
Down. Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer an amendment. Page 3, lines 3.12 and 3.13. I'll first offer the amendment and we can discuss. I think that's appropriate. 3.12, I would strike at the end of the line to a son or, and then line 3.13, daughter of the owner, comma. So it would read, if land described in paragraph A is sold or otherwise transferred, it will continue to qualify by treatment.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dimmer, this is the expansion that we just talked about where anybody could transfer land to anyone and continue to receive preferential tract treatment on non-conforming land, and I don't support that. For the period of the grandfather.
Senator Scoy, I understand that. We did talk about it, and I made a decision that we're just going to have to decide here as a group. You use non-conforming land, and I would submit that it's not non-conforming. It's in the program. Right or wrong, what we're doing, The land's in the program, it's in Green Acres. We have now a time frame. We're setting up a clock that's ticking. From the time this is enacted, they got until 2013. It's either going to be out of Green Acres, it's going to be out of Green Acres, period. It's either going to go to the Rural Preserve, or it's going to go out altogether. I think during that four-year time frame, Senator Scoy, we've got people who are conforming, non-conforming. I'm not comfortable with that, to be honest. It's in. And we're setting up, basically we're saying, not only do you have to come out in 2013 if you have rural vacant land, but you're kind of a second-class citizen, because Green Acres people can do what they want to, but you can't because you shouldn't have been in, and now we're going to punish you because you shouldn't have gone there. Truth is, they're there. They're in. It's in Green Acres. And I think they have the full intent. They put it in. They argue if it's good or bad. That's why we're here, because we realize there was issues. That's why the auditor brought this up. We're making it come out in 2013. I think the least we can do is, until that time, when that happens, and we still got work to do in terms of the rural preserve, that we would give them latitude to transfer it to folks, to sell it to whatever, and treat it as Green Acres, even though, as you say, non-conforming. It isn't Green Acres. It's going to be coming out in 2013, maybe earlier if we decide that next year. I don't know. But right now, it's out in 2013. I just really feel they should get Green Acres treatment while it's in, right or wrong, because it was put in before, and we're treating them differently than the other Green Acres.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Demmer, if we leave this language as it is, they will be getting the Green Acres treatment that they signed up for when they signed their contract, whatever number of years ago. The department informed me that death, divorce, marriage, transfer to a son or daughter did not require reevaluation of eligibility of benefits. If we leave this language in there, the way I understand this, death, divorce, marriage, transfer to a son or daughter will not require reevaluation of benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Senator Scully, I understand that. That's with the added part that if I've got land in Green Acres, I can sell it to you, and you can continue in Green Acres if you want to. If you've got land in Green Acres and it's rural vacant, you can't sell it to me. You can only sell it to your son or daughter, or you can die.
Senator Floyd's point is that that's what the conditions they signed up on were. They knew that when they signed up.
Mr. Chair, I beg to differ. I think they signed up their Green Acres. Whatever the Green Acres provisions they can do, they can do. Green Acres allows you to sell it and transfer it to anybody. This is a restriction, a new restriction on rural vacant land that's in Green Acres, as far as I can see. Because Green Acres land does not have this restriction.
Mr. Chair, Representative Demmer, the reason it's different for the people that are in Green Acres is because their land is conforming to the condition.
For 4 years.
Well, and after that, too, for that matter, for 4 years.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would submit that at the time they put it into Green Acres, it was conforming. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in Green Acres. We're looking back and saying we don't want it to be that way anymore, and we're changing it. So when they put it in, it went in. It's there. The difference between an ag Green Acres and a rural vacant Green Acres, I'm submitting, should stay the same until 2013. That's the, you know, we can vote.
Yeah, we just put a lot of work into this thing. Chair would like to recognize that. On the
just quickly, again, we got a year and a half. I mean, I'll say that too. And frankly, if the phone rings off the hook on this one too, Senator Scully will know it, just like the one that we put on. So I think it's a fair trade-off at this point, that stipulation.
On the Denver motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Any other discussion on Green Acres, members? Does staff understand what we've done here so that we can get this article drafted into a conference committee report? Members, Article 1, the conformity article.
Did we move this?
Oh,
we're on Article 2, okay.
On the JMZ-0003 as amended, Senator Scoy, move. All in favor that that be incorporated into a conference committee report. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
The motion is there. On the conformity article,
Representative Blanchetti and I haven't had a little time to visit down here while all this Green Acre discussion has been going on. And it's really around the discussion we had last night. The Senate feels pretty strongly that setting the precedent of delaying tax refunds is not a good precedent to set. A better way to pay for the conformity that the House is proposing is to just use some of the $236 million that's unencumbered right now sitting on the bottom line on June 30th of 2009. And I believe Representative Chesky and I have come to an agreement that that's the approach we'd like to take in the conference committee report, that we would not do the delay of the corporate refunds. In addition, it seems pretty apparent that if the teacher's provision that scores at $1 million is unlikely to be accessed by many teachers. We talked last night about if you're in the middle tax bracket, there's a $14 tax benefit to it. Few people are going to file for that refund, but by adopting the provision, we would end up encumbering $1 million that somewhere later in this session we're going to have to raise. So our thought is we would not incorporate the teacher provision, and there's one other provision that was added on the House floor that the Senate really is not interested in doing, and it's the numbers on your side-by-side, it's on page 8. The provision that I think was put on by amendment on the floor of the House. Who authored that? Representative Stellar's provision. You know, members, this really is an administrative function. It's the governor's job to recommend for appointment commissioners, the Senate's job to confirm or not confirm those appointments. We really don't think that belongs in this bill, so I have suggested, and I believe Representative Lanchevsky concurs, that we would not put that provision into the conformity article either. Is there anything else we see that we talked about? So everybody understand that the House is going to get the conformity they wanted, minus that one provision, and minus the teachers, and we're not going to do the corporate refund, the corporate delay of refunds. We're just going to pay for it. Any question on that as a thought? If not, I'd like to direct staff to incorporate those changes into Article 1 and the associated spreadsheet. Any question on that? This one, Mark.
For the teachers, it's 4 years. For the teachers,
or is this the first year? Question
number 08
or 08?
We were not going to do what the House had in their bill relative to the teachers. Any questions on directing staff to draft Article 1 and the associated spreadsheet? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails on Article 1. Anything else in front of it? So we will. Sarah,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and members. I really want to thank everybody for the input that we've had. This Green Acres issue has gotten to be thorny, and I really need to thank a number of people sitting out here. I won't start trying to name them, but there's been a lot of people that have worked hard on this. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'd like to publicly thank Senator Skoy because he put a lot of effort into this. We talked about this early in the session. Representative Lanchesky indicated to me that the House likely was going to deal with Green Acres in their omnibus bill. I got a little nervous about that. You know, I think we need a tax bill this year. But it may be very difficult to accomplish with the governor. Seriously. I mean, who knows at what date we may end up passing an omnibus tax bill this year. So I think it's important we get this piece of work done. I want to thank everybody for what especially the House members for their patience in dealing with the Senate's way of trying to accomplish this. But you know, people are going to be falling on the ground and planting pretty soon. You want them to make good decisions, good land use decisions. And I think we've come a long way. Everybody did a lot of great work here. Any other comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to echo the same things. I think this has been a good process. We've got there's things to work on. But I think I want to say in good judgment, we've said, let's give it some time. People can look this over. We can look it over. We have this session and another session with which to do this sort of thing. Bottom line is, there's a lot of angst out there. We all know that. It's important that we get this done, and I think it's good work that the Senate and the House are working together. We're going to move this thing through. We've got lots of issues to deal with, and budget and all that kind of stuff. It's going to be interesting. This is important. It's going to get done. People can get planting and forget about this issue, I think, for now. So thank you for your work and for having us.
You know, it's better than the Green Acres program that the legislative auditors did a review on. And I think it's better and more consistent policy for the state than what we put in law last year. So I think for today at least, I think it's a pretty good product. Representative Judge.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to apologize up front. I have one small oral to instruct him before we vote on the whole bill. It's been agreed on by us. It's simply to instruct staff that any farm, that any qualified farm in the state can also sign up for Green Acres, because we have in Stearns County and Canada County and even up north and represents Scotia, we have poultry farms that are under a different corporate ownership structure because of a farm rule. So we're just going to instruct them that they are a farm like anyone else, just like our nurseries are farms and others. So anyone who qualifies as a farm in the state qualifies for this program. And we've talked about it. It's a technical thing. We want to get that orally on here. Again, the poultry folks and Department of Ag had approached us on that. And it's a very simple thing, but it needs to be on the tape as one of those oral amendments.
Do we need something in the language?
Yes. They have it, though. I've given them the language.
Well, we understand what we need there. Farm is a farm is a farm.
Yes.
So, Michael, you understand what we're doing here?
Yes.
Part of Article 2? On the Johnny Oral Amendment to Article 2. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
No motion prevails. On adoption of Article 1 and Article 2, that they be enrolled into a conference committee report. That I think we'll have ready for signatures Monday, probably. So we'll just, rather than meet again, we'll just bring it around round robin, get everybody's signatures on the floor, and get it up the floor as soon as we can. On the motion that Article 1 and Article 2 be incorporated into a conference committee report on House File 392. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no?
No.
The motion prevails. Members, thank you all very much.
Thank you.
This is the very first conference committee of the session.